So, but still, just to do this, so I guess the hint is, well, first of all, remember how you got the three-legged from the two, or how I proposed to get the three-legged Roach from the two. So adding a leg, first of all, prevents the body from going into a certain area. So it takes the answer from the previous case and cuts a piece out. Okay? But it also doubles the rest. So you take a sphere, cut a disc out, double the rest, so you get two spheres with a disc missing, and two spheres with a disc missing, kissing each other along the missing disc, looks like this, but that's again a sphere. Okay, now what happens if you have four legs? Starting from three legs, adding a fourth cuts a piece of the space out. But what does that piece look like? So the body before could go into could be anywhere on a triangle. When you cut a piece out, you make somehow a hole in the space, but the hole is itself made of two components, because points in the hole are points in which the leg that made this, that forced this constraint, is never straight. So if you're at the hole, there are two ways you could be at the hole, either with this leg up or with this leg down. So really you're cutting two holes in the sphere. Again, you'll have to digest it later, okay, on your own. And to also continue on your own. So what happens, so again, you have a sphere, you cut two holes, and then you do something and it's for you to tell me what comes out. Okay, that was the hint, and let's move on to ordinary class material. So first of all, a few announcements. We're following the handout I started distributing last time about compactness in metric spaces. Practically the whole content is on the blackboard. There is another handout which maybe you should pass around with my teaching schedule for December. So basically, December is the last, well, I guess next week is the last week of classes. So the last normally scheduled class is on Monday, but you may be aware that Wednesday is an extra Monday. So we still have a class on Wednesday. Okay? Okay? And after that, I have lots of office hours before the exam and lots of other sort of occasions. So it's all on this handout that's being distributed. It's also on the web. I don't yet have anything to say about the exam itself. This is just the mechanical schedule. I will discuss the exam when it comes nearer. Okay. Homework 8, which is the last homework, will be on the web by midnight tonight. Read along for today is Moncrief chapter 43 and 45. And, okay, the content for today is one theorem. Well, it's really like 15 theorems that are compressed into one, okay? But it's essentially one topic. Given a metric space X, I'm going to give you five different conditions that are all equivalent to compactness. So for Rn, we have the condition a subset is compact if and only if it's closed and bounded. In a general metric space, we're going to have five different conditions, all equivalent. Okay? And each one of them sort of is useful in different circumstances, but also the arguments to go between them are fun, each one. Okay? Or at least many of them are a little bit fun. So that's the goal for today. Now, many of the notions here are not defined yet, so I'll have to define them as I go. Okay? So, again, let me just read these things out loud one time. So for the following are equivalent for a metric space X. 1, X is compact. 2, X is limit point compact. 3, X is sequentially compact. 4, X is totally bounded and satisfies Lebesgue's lemma. And 5, X is totally bounded and complete. So let's start with 1 implies 2, except I first have to define what limit point compact is. So definition, a topological space X is, it's generally topological space, not necessarily metric. So X is so-called limit point compact if one way to say it is that every infinite set has an accumulation point, but in the language we used, did we use the word accumulation point? What? Maybe we said maybe limit point? What did we say when we defined, if every infinite subset of A of X has a limit point. So let me remind you what a limit point is. So maybe I think we called it A prime. Okay? And A prime was the set of all limit points. Okay, so really I'm asserting that the set of limit points is non-empty. But let me remind you what is a limit point. A limit point is a point X such that every neighborhood of X intersects A in more than X itself. Okay? In more than just the point X itself. In other words, a point set X belongs to the set of limit points if and only if for every neighborhood U of X, if you look at U minus the point X itself, this already intersects A. So this intersect A is not equal to empty. Is not equal to the empty set. Okay? So for example, if you look at the sequence, a sequence of points like this in the real line, so they get closer and closer to each other, then each individual point is in the closure of this sequence, but not a limit point, because this point has a neighborhood that intersects the set A, well, this is the set A, well, only in that point itself, okay? However, the limit point of this sequence, so sorry for using the same language, but the point at the end here, the supremum of this sequence of points, is not in the point A, is not in the set A itself, yet every neighborhood of it intersects A, in more than one point, in more than just the point itself. Okay. So we also proved at some point that the closure of a set, so this is a lemma that we proved a long time ago, and it says that the closure of a set is equal to the set A union the set of all its limit points. Okay. So now that I know what a limit point is, I can prove 1 implies 2. So assume not. Okay? So in fact, 1 implies 2 not just in a metric space. So in fact, this works, the proof that I'm going to write works in any T2 space. In any Hausdorff space. The metric space is in particular Hausdorff, so that works. So suppose not. So assume A is infinite, yet the set of limit points of A is the empty set. So A is closed because the closure of A is equal by the lemma from many weeks ago. It's equal to A union the set of limit points of A, but there are no limit points, so A must be closed on its own. So the closure is A itself, so A is closed on its own. Okay? So being a closed subset of a compact space, right? I'm proving 1 equals 2 implies 2, so I'm assuming that my space is compact. Okay? So being a closed subset of a compact space, A is compact. Okay? I need a hint. So now I know that A is compact, and I know that no points of A are limit points of A. Why is this sort of a contradiction? So I know that A is infinite, it's compact. Being compact means kind of that the points are, being not a limit point, means that the points are kind of far away of each other. Why is this a contradiction? Yes?
So I can take a neighborhood around each point such that the neighborhood contains only that point.
Right.
And then I take neighborhoods around each point and there's no finite subcover.
Right. Precisely. Okay? So basically, well, suppose there was no limit point. So suppose the sequence continues like this. You know what? Let's make a new one. So suppose the sequence continues like this. Each one would have a neighborhood around it that contains only itself, that would be an open cover of the set, and it would be infinite, and no finite subcover of it would cover everything, because we need each open set, because each one covers at least one point, because each one covers just one point. No one point is covered by any other open set. Okay? So let's write it. So A is compact. As A prime is equal to the empty set, for every x inside A, we can find a neighborhood u sub x such that u sub x intersect A is equal to just the point X itself. Okay? And then the collection of all U sub X's is an open cover of A, which not only has no finite subcovers, in fact it has no subcovers at all. If you remove any of the U sub X's, then that particular X for which the UX, for which you've removed its UX, will not be covered. So it has no subcovers whatsoever, and in particular, no finite subcovers. So this is an open cover of A that has no subcovers, hence no finite subcovers, hence A is not compact. And I'm a bit confused. It looks to me like I didn't even use the fact that it's T2. So, yeah?
Don't you need the T2 fact to show that a closed subset of the, or am I getting it backwards?
Yeah, I think it's backwards. So I think we didn't even use the fact that it's T2. So it's just generally true. Okay.
It's compact because T2 and a subset of a compact
set. No, a closed subset of a compact set is always compact. What it's the other direction, that it, a compact subset of a compact space is closed if you also know T2.
So is this so, working without
the so I think the proof didn't even use T2. So that's, well, okay. So metric hasn't yet entered. We're going to, metric will come in a minute. Okay, sorry. So, so now I want to do 2 implies 3, but I still don't know what 3 means, so let me define it. So definition, a topological space X is called sequentially, and I hope I'm spelling sequentially right, compact if, so again, this is a something that you must have seen earlier in general, on the reline, as a property of closed sets or closed and bounded sets, okay? But let me state it in general. If every sequence in X has a convergent subsequence. Okay? So, by the way, if you want a bizarre example of a compact space in which not every sequence has a convergent sequence, here is an example. So example, consider the space beta n, the Stoneck compactification of the natural numbers, and there is an obvious sequence in beta n. Which sequence would you take? So it's kind of a natural, God-given sequence that, well, just the natural numbers themselves. Okay? So let an be the sequence phi of n. Okay? What we call phi of n, or simply what we call n itself, when you think of the natural numbers being as a subset of beta n. So this is, so again, the picture for beta n was like it was a sequence of points which converges to a big cloud of things with many, many, many things in it. Okay? Now, no subsequence of this sequence will have a single limit point. Will have a limit. Okay? It's, I guess, you know, I'm not proving it, but it's not hard to prove. It's something that that you can work out, but every individual subsequence will still not have a single limit point, but many, 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 many different limit points. You know, should I remind what the definition of convergent is? What a convergent subsequence is? So maybe I'll put it on the side. So aside, a sequence yn converges to a point y means every neighborhood of the supposed limit contains all but finitely many of the yn's. So in other words, beyond a certain point, if you pick a neighborhood of y, beyond a certain point, all elements of the sequence are in that neighborhood. Okay? So the Stoneck compactification will have the property that every subsequence will have limit points, so we'll have points, each neighborhood of which will contain infinitely many elements of the sequence, but not all of them. But not all, but finitely many of them. So I'm leaving it without a proof, just as a statement. There was a question? Okay. Anyway, so now I want to actually prove the side which is right. So 2 implies 3, and I suppose I need a hint. So again, I have a sequence in a metric space. Now it's a metric space. The sequence being an infinite set in itself will have a limit point. What am I going to do with that limit point? Yes?
Take a series of balls of radius 1 over n, say, about the limit point.
Yes.
And then take one point from each of those in the neighborhoods.
Yes. And that sequence, okay, correct. So, well, almost correct. There is a tiny, tiny mistake, which is sort of so easy to make that, on every normal day, I would have made it too. So, but I'll say it in a minute, okay? So here is the picture. So we have the space. We have a sequence of points. The sequence of points is in particular infinite. So there is some point in the space which is an accumulation point of this sequence. So this sequence might travel around the space a zillion times, but it's going to pass near this point many, many times, right? Because this point is an accumulation point. So take a neighborhood of size, a ball of size 1 around this point, and you'll find a point in the sequence that's in that ball. Then take a ball of radius 1/2, and you'll find a point in the sequence that's around that ball. Then take a ball of radius 1/3, and you'll find another point. And you've just generated a subsequence that converges to your point. Now, what's the mistake? The mistake is that an infinite sequence is actually not necessarily an infinite subset of this space. In other words, the infinite sequence could just go here, go here, go here, go here, go here, go here. Like the sequence 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, 1. What do I do in this case? It's so silly, but yeah?
Just take one of them.
Well, take the one which was visited infinitely many points and infinitely many times. Right? It could be that the sequence actually goes to here, and then 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 to here. So we visited this one only once. So this one you want to avoid. You want to go to one of those that were visited infinitely many times. Okay, so now let's write it. So proof. Okay, let an be a sequence in X. If the set AN, so make a set out of the AN, so eliminate repetitions, is finite, then
Then
at least one of the elements of this set occurs for or repeats for infinitely many indices. Okay, then again, I don't want to write it in too much detail, so I'll just write then at least one of its elements, let's call it A, is A sub n for infinitely many n's. Let n1, n2, n3, and so on be an enumeration of these, or you know what, let's even make them increasing. N1 smaller than N2, smaller than N3, and so on, be an enumeration of these n's. So ANI is equal to A for all I, and then A sub NI converges to A. So, right, because it's the constant A. So, we found a subsequence of the original sequence, which converges. Okay, so that was the annoying case. And now the case that the more interesting case, and the case that first comes to mind. So otherwise, this set, let's give it a name, A. So otherwise, A is infinite. Infinite. So, pick some element. Again, for the lack of, you know what? Let's call it X. Let's find a different name. So, pick an element A inside the collection of limit points of A. This is possible because our topological space is limit point compact, meaning every infinite set, and in particular A, has a limit point. Okay? So, and then, if you look at the ball around the point X of radius 1, and you look at, and you remove the point X itself in it, from it, then it intersects A. So this is not equal to zero, is not equal to the empty set, by the fact that x is a limit point of A. Okay? So choose an element of A which is in this intersection. So choose N1 such that AN1, well, B, first of all, every element of A is AN1 for some N1. So such that AN1 is inside this difference. So is inside the ball around x of radius 1, yet it is not the point x itself. AN1 is not equal to x. Okay? Now, I guess I can appeal to either You know what? Let me just continue. So let epsilon 2 be the distance between x and x1. Okay? Let's consider the ball around x of radius 1/2 and subtract the point x itself and intersect it with A. So I slightly have a problem. No, wait, do I have a problem?
Yeah, how do you make sure N2 is greater than N1?
Right, how do I make sure that N2 is greater than N1? Yeah?
You could, instead of selecting 1/2, you could...
Yeah, that's what I was going to do before.
Well,
but that still wouldn't tell me that by coincidence I wouldn't find an X which is even... Sorry, AN2, which is even before.
You could truncate.
So I guess the point is that I have to refer to something that we've proven before. We've proven before that this set is infinite, that this intersection not only is non-empty, but in fact it's infinite. So since it is infinite, so since this intersection is infinite, so I can choose first of all an N2 which is bigger than N1, because there are infinitely many N2s that I could choose. So pick one which is bigger than N1 such that AN2 is inside the ball of radius 1/2 around x, and AN2 is not equal to our target point. And now continue. So, continuing by induction, we find a sequence n1 smaller than n2, smaller than n3, smaller than n4, and so on, such that for every n, for every I, every k, I guess, for every k, a n k belongs to the ball about x of radius 1 over k. And then it's easy to show that A n k, well, first of all, of course, it's a subsequence of the sequence A n, and it converges to x. Basically, every neighborhood of x will contain a ball around x. Therefore, it will contain a ball of radius 1 over k for some k. And then it will therefore contain all the balls after that k. And therefore, it will contain all the a and k's after that k. So it will contain all but finitely many of the a and k's. And that's the end. OK. So these are somehow still the less fun properties. The fun properties are the one coming up. So let me prove that 3 implies 4, but 4 is made out of two parts. So let's do each one of them separately. So the first of all is the definition of totally bounded. So I guess, so in Rn, we know that if a subset, if a set is consider the metric space R. So I'm not yet defining, I'm just giving some motivation. So is R bounded as a metric space? So the answer is, the correct answer, so one answer is no, which is fairly correct, which is in some sense correct. But there is another answer equally correct, which is depends which metric you choose. Right? So R is homeomorphic to minus 1, 1. Okay? But minus 1, 1, well, so this is a finite interval. And this finite interval is bounded. Okay? So you know what? Let me just write the definition. So definition, a metric space. No, I gave you the wrong example. I'm sorry. A metric space X is totally bounded.
Is it one epsilon or finite domain?
Yes. If you can. Well. If for any epsilon greater than 0, x can be covered by
finitely many epsilon balls. So basically, if for any small number I can cover x with finitely many balls of size that small number. Okay? So let's do a little bit of easy claim. So does totally bounded imply bounded? So you see, if you know that the space is totally bounded, in particular, it means that you can cover it by finitely many balls of radius 1, and then the maximum distance between any two points in it is the maximum distance between the centers of two balls, which is a finite distance, perhaps plus 2. Okay? So it's bounded. So an easy claim is a totally bounded implies bounded. So question, does bounded imply totally bounded? So can somebody give me a counterexample? Yeah?
C0 with circular metric. So space of continuous functions over a compact interval.
Well, it's strictly speaking, it's not bounded. Okay. But there are even easier examples. Take an infinite set and declare that the distance between any two elements of that set is equal to 1. Okay? So put a metric on some infinite set on, say, the natural numbers by declaring that the distance of I from j is equal to 1 unless I is equal to j. If I is equal to j, of course, you have to put the distance to be 0. Okay? So you have infinitely many things all at distance 1 of each other. It's definitely bounded because, well, the bound is 1. But it's not totally bounded because any ball of radius 1/2 will have only one point in it. So you need infinitely many balls of radius 1/2 if you want to cover all of this. Okay. So I suppose the answer here is no. Okay. Can somebody give me an easy proof that if a space is, that if a metric space is compact, then it's totally bounded? Yeah. Right, if a space is compact, then it has a cover by epsilon balls. Maybe it's going to be an infinite cover. Just take all epsilon balls, they cover the space. And that has a finite subcover, so you can cover it by finitely many epsilon balls. But that's not the point. Okay? I'm still trying to prove the statements in sequence, because eventually I'll want to show that they're all equivalent. So my next question is, suppose that the space is sequentially compact. I only know that every sequence converges. Every sequence has a convergent subsequence. Is it totally bounded? So again, I will know that sequentially compact is equivalent to compact, but I don't know it yet, so I cannot use it.
Suppose I know that sequentially suppose I know that the space is sequentially compact, how do I know that it's totally bounded? Yeah?
You start off with an epsilon ball. You pick a point outside of it, and then you put an epsilon ball around that point and keep on going. This sequence has to converge somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a contradiction because everything has to be epsilon distance apart.
I think you have the root or the key point, but it's not yet perfectly formulated. So let me reformulate what you just said. So suppose our space was not totally bounded. Okay, meaning there was some epsilon for which you cannot cover it with finitely many epsilon balls. Okay? So you pick a point, you look at the epsilon ball around it, it doesn't cover the space. Meaning there is some point outside of it. You put an epsilon ball around it, it still doesn't cover the space because we just have two. So you put an epsilon ball, so there is yet another point outside. You take an epsilon ball, it still doesn't cover the space. So basically, you can keep finding in this way more and more points such that each one is not within an epsilon ball of any of the previous ones. So this is a sequence of points for which the distance, the pairwise distances between them is always bigger than epsilon. So what? Why? Yeah?
So the distance between any two points is at least epsilon.
Yeah.
And so we cannot possibly have a convergent subsequence.
Why?
Because even if we take any subsequence,
yes,
the distance between points within that subsequence will also have distance at least epsilon.
Good, so?
So if there is in fact a limit, then...
Okay, there is a tiny bit of an argument to add at the end, or maybe an older statement to refer to. So let me do it very quickly, and the rest of these properties will have to wait until Thursday. I think I declared it as a two-hour thing, so it will continue into next time. So, okay, let me prove that 3 implies totally bounded. Assume not. So assume assume there exists epsilon greater than 0 such that no finite set of epsilon balls covers X. By induction, suppose we have sequence A1 up to AN minus 1 such that AI, the distance between AI and AJ, is greater than epsilon for all I different than j between 1 and n minus 1. And then the balls of around AI of radius epsilon do not cover x, we can find AN in the complement of all of these balls. Inside the union of all of these balls complement, or said differently, not inside the union of these balls. So the distance from AI to AN is greater than epsilon for every I between 1 and N minus 1. So we get, at the end, we get a sequence AI So I just told you how to find the next element of the sequence. But just continue, and you get the sequence AI such that AI, the distance between AI and AJ is greater than epsilon whenever I is not equal to J. So, if ANI, or sorry, it's a C, well, okay, is a subsequence of this sequence of AI, then it cannot converge. So assume it does converge. So assume ANI goes to X, i.e. The ball around X of radius epsilon over 2 contains infinitely many, in fact all but finitely many, but in particular infinitely many of the ANIs. In particular, it contains two of them, meaning at least two. But then the distance between these two, but then the distance between these two is less than epsilon, and this contradicts the fact that the distance between any two elements of the original sequence is greater than epsilon. Sorry, at the end I had to rush and also run a little bit over time, so I apologize and we will continue next time.